So I was going to tell you a little bit about some work I've been doing on gravitational lensing of high redshift sources. And let me begin by pointing out that the universe really isn't Robertson-Walker. I mean, we say it's Robertson-Walker, and it helps us sleep at night. But if you know, a key assumption of Robertson-Walker is that it's homogeneous and isotropic. And we just have to look around to know the universe is not really homogeneous and isotropic. So the question is this important? Is this difference important? And what I want you to do is put yourself in the position of a photon coming from a distant source to us. So from the photon's point of view, most of the time, it's in essentially vacuum. And then every now and then, it hits a large density contrast, say a galaxy or a star. Density shoots up, then it goes back to vacuum. It's in vacuum for a few megaparsecs. Maybe this happens again. And this keeps on going until it hits a huge density contrast, which is the CCD. And then that's the end of the photon. And we record it, and we record all its closest best friends. And we make an image. And then we say, we're going to, from that image, interpret what the source really looked like. And to do that, we have to make some assumptions about what happened to the photon along the way. And what do we assume? We usually say, well, it went through Robertson-Walker. So there's some tension there. And what I want to address here is how you look through that and if what happens if you do the calculations perhaps a little more carefully, whether we really have to worry about lensing, about the fact that photons don't go through pure Robertson-Walker dust as they come to us. So just to get a clear question in your mind, here's the sort of thing I'd like to address, which is given a sample of standard candle sources. So these are sources that have a known fixed intrinsic luminosity. Stick them at some high redshift, all at the same redshift, and ask, what would we actually see if we were to observe them? So in a Robertson-Walker universe, in a true Robertson-Walker universe, we would observe them all to have the same brightness. And we'll just call this the Robertson-Walker brightness. But in a real universe, some of the lines of sight to some of the sources will pass near galaxies. Some will go through voids the whole way. And in effect, there'll be a whole distribution of brightnesses. And it's that distribution that we want to calculate. And there are various ways to do this. There are analytic expressions. You make certain assumptions. You can generate analytic expressions for the distributions. You can use n-body simulations. What I'll be using for what I'm talking about is what I call stochastic universe method. This is something I developed with Bob Wald a few years ago, where we take a photon and we sort of randomly generate a universe around the photon as it travels. And we do this many times and generate statistics. And there are a lot of details I'm leaving out here. For example, you need to know the distribution of masses of your galaxies. You need to know the mass distribution within the galaxies. There are lots of things that go into doing these calculations. It turns out that most of those details are not important. And there are some generic features, which I'll show you right now. So what you end up calculating is a magnification distribution. So what I'm showing here is the probability of finding a certain so for a source at some redshift, in this case I'm taking redshift of 2, this is the probability of finding a given magnification as a function of magnification. And I've normalized the magnifications here by the Robertson-Walker magnification. So if you were in a pure Robertson-Walker universe, all your sources at this redshift of 2 would have the same magnification. It would be Robertson-Walker, and this plot would be a delta function at 1. That's right. I'm assuming no absorption. So here the photons don't interact with any of the matter. It's only gravity. So there are a few comments about a plot like this. This is generically, all of these distributions look pretty much like this. There are some differences as a function of cosmology and as a function of the mass distributions, but overall, the generic features are the following. The majority of the images are dim. They're dimmer than they would have been in Robertson-Walker. Okay. However, if you get the average magnification, so if you integrate mu, p, mu, d, mu, you'll find that the average comes out to 1, comes out to what it would have been in Robertson-Walker. So it's equivalent to saying if you add up all the photons from all your images, you get the same number of photons as you would have had you been in Robertson-Walker. It's photon conservation. So what you have is you have the majority of images that are dim, but the average comes out to 1, which tells you that there is this long tail, which there in fact is, that goes out to very high magnification. which compensates for the shortfall of photons in most images. So the generic features on most of your images are slightly dimmer than they would have been in Robertson Walker. A few are significantly brighter, and then there are a few that are multiply imaged, which I'll talk about in a second. But the important thing to remember is that when you're talking about high redshift sources, essentially every source is being lensed. The photons from that source aren't going through Robertson Walker. There's a distribution of the brightnesses that you would observe, and that's the sort of thing you see. So the issue now is what sort of science can be done with this. And there are actually a lot of different things that can be done. I'm just going to focus on one project which I'm working on right now, which is multiple imaging of supernovae. But there are a lot of other things that I've looked into, especially with the weak lensing side, the demagnification side. But let me talk about the strong magnification side now. So just think for a second what a multiply imaged supernova would look like. So you're probably familiar with multiply imaged quasars, where you have a distant quasar and there's a galaxy near the line of sight, and you get multiple images of that quasar. So a multiply imaged supernova is the same thing, only instead of having a persistent source, the supernova is a temporary source. So what you really see is you'd see a number of supernovae going off closely clustered on the sky with some time delay between them. The light profiles of the supernovae of the images would be identical except for an overall amplification shift. So what you would see for a multiply image supernovae is multiple supernovae that look very similar to each other closely clustered. Now, if you were to see something like this, there's quite a bit of science that could be done with them. For example, just the number of systems that are multiply imaged is a sensitive probe of the cosmology. It's a probe of the cosmological parameters of the matter distribution. So if you see 100, there's issues of selection effects, but if you had no selection effects and you just found, say, 1,000 supernovae at a given redshift, say redshift of 2, and you counted the number that were multiply imaged, that would be a sensitive probe of cosmology. And what's important about that probe is that it's independent of the things that we usually use to measure cosmology. So for example, when people measure lambda, what they do is they take supernovae and they treat them as standard candles and they look at the luminosity distance at high redshift. Now, this sort of measurement where you're just using a fraction of multiple image sources is independent of the supernovae being standard candles. And it's independent of many of the systematic errors that would go into some these other sorts of measurements of lambda. So it's a very powerful measurement. In addition, you can use the supernovae to measure the Hubble constant, much in the same way that multiply imaged quasars are used to measure the Hubble constant. Though in the quasar case, it's fairly difficult to establish the time delay. While in a supernova case, it's easy, because you just take the peak luminosity, which you can know to hours, and assuming that you have photometry for all your images, you can get the time delay pretty straight. It's a pretty straightforward operation. However, there's one thing in addition that you can do with supernovae that you can't do in any other lens system, which is since the supernovae are standard candles, you can use that to break what's called the mass sheet degeneracy. So in a standard lensing system, what you measure is the brightness of each of your images. But since you don't know the intrinsic brightness of your source, usually it's a quasar and you just don't know what the intrinsic brightness was, all you really are measuring are the ratios of the brightnesses of the images. So there could be a sheet of matter, a uniform sheet of matter, in between us and the source that brightens all the images the same amount, and the ratios stay the same, and you never know. Now, if there's a supernova in a field, and you only need one, then you break that mass sheet degeneracy, because then you know the exact brightening, the exact magnification along the line of sight to the supernova, because it's a standard candle, and you can figure out whether or not there's a mass sheet and how much mass there is in it. So multiply imaged supernovae are a very, very powerful probe of cosmology. The question is, do we have any chance of ever seeing one? So let me address that now. So using the same method that I was talking about earlier, you can calculate the probability for multiple imaging. So what I'm plotting here is essentially the optical depth. It's the probability for having a multiply imaged source as a function of redshift. So as you go to higher redshift, the probability that you get multiple images increases. And just to orient you, at redshift of 2, the probability is on the order of 0.5%. Now again, this depends somewhat on the cosmological parameters. And it's exactly this dependence which I was talking about measuring in the previous slide. Now, with these sorts of numbers, a 0.5% and redshift of 2, or this plot, we could ask, is there any chance of seeing it with the data we have so far? And to orient you, we have on the order of 100 supernovae at high redshift. And by high redshift, most of those are about redshift of a half, with a few going to 1 and spilling over a little bit. But the vast majority of the supernovae we have so far are down around here. So we would expect on the order of 1 in 1,000 to be multiply imaged. So given that that's the case, unless we're spectacularly lucky, we wouldn't expect any of the supernovae we've seen so far to be multiply imaged, or that we will see in the near future. And there's one other wrinkle, which is to detect a multiply imaged supernova, you have to see all the images, which means you have to be observing the same part of sky where each supernova happens for weeks to months afterwards to catch another image that might show up. And this isn't the way it's done. We don't spend the resources to look every night to see if another supernova has happened in the same region of the sky. So given that that's the case, there's really little hope with current methods that we'll ever see a multiply imaged supernova. But it's not quite the end of the story. There's a satellite being proposed. It's a dicey business, but there is a satellite being proposed called SnapSat, which is meant to, its main purpose is to do the luminosity distance relation out to high redshift, about redshift of 1.7, with in mind trying to constrain quintessence models or time varying cosmological constant, try to address the issue of the accelerating universe. But the way it's going to do that is see thousands of supernovae at high redshift. And the way it's currently configured, it would see on the order of 2,000 supernovae between redshift of a half and 1.7. And if you just take those numbers and run them through, what you find is that with a satellite of this sort, you would see on the order of 4 multiply imaged supernovae per year. And not only that, but the way the satellite is supposed to work is it will look at the same region of the sky over and over and over again. So it really would find every supernovae that happens in a certain region. So there is a good chance that it would really find, if these supernovae were multiply imaged, it would actually see both images. So this is something that definitely should be looked for. But I don't want you to think that this is some sort of anomaly. The bottom line with this stuff is that there's a phenomenal amount of data being generated, and a lot of this data is a very high redshift. So really what's happening is you have all these very clean high redshift images, and the bottom line is all these images are lensed. So it's sort of a bonanza. You just go to these surveys and you say, well, I'm gonna look at lensing in these surveys. The lensing is not only a source of noise, but you can use the lensing as a very, very powerful probe of the universe that we're in. Thanks. That's it. Right. So I'm not considering absorption. So, but that's right. I mean, if you let the photons interact, absorption, scattering, you change the way things work. So for example, on all these things, if the images pass, if the line of sight actually passes through a density contrast, a galaxy, then this could easily get dimmed or changed, and that's not something that I'm considering. It actually doesn't matter that much because most of these images don't actually, the line of sight seldom actually passes right through the core of a galaxy. So it does matter in the sense that in a lot of these multiple imaging cases, there is a third very faint image, which is directly through the galaxy. And those we just don't see. The galaxy sort of wipes them out. But in most of what I'm talking about, it's not really relevant. That's right.
How competitive would that be for measuring the target
So there are a few things you can do very easily, one of which is you can get the dark matter fraction in compact objects. And that's essentially trivial. Just by the shape of that, of the distribution of the lensing, you can say, well, the dark matter is this clumped, is this clustered. Because lensing is really, it's very sensitive to matter that the distinguish, what it distinguishes between is matter that's clumped within its Einstein radius to matter that's not within its lifetime radius. So, as long as you draw a line across that, lensing is very effective in telling the difference. Now, when you talk about clustering on scales of, say, galaxies and clustering those galaxies, unless you're taking galaxies that are not inside their Einstein radii and clustering them such that the new cluster is within its Einstein radius, lensing isn't very sensitive. Not sure if you followed that. But so the bottom line is it's actually not as sensitive as you might hope to clustering. Or on the other hand, you can say issues of the details of the power spectra are not important when you're talking about this sort of lensing. So it's not a source of noise for the lensing that is at this level. Right.
And the criticism of that was that when you work in strong lensing waves, it's very sensitive. While these are very sensitive to cosmology, it was very sensitive actually to the detailed structure of the galaxy, anisotropic and mass model. You were something like an isothermal model.
Right, that's right. So one of the things I've actually done is looked at these statistics, not only with isothermal galaxies, but NFW profiles. And you can try a number of different profiles, different mass distributions. And I find that it's not that sensitive. Now, if you're trying to map the matter distribution directly, then it's very, very sensitive to the shapes of the profiles. And if you're doing things like counting the number of images, then again, it's very sensitive to the shapes of the profiles. But if you're just asking the simplest level question, how many systems are multiply imaged, then it's not very sensitive.